Hello, everyone. I'm an addict alcoholic named Antonio. Thank you, Manny. I appreciate that introduction. And thank you to Thomas. It's funny, actually, how I come to be here because I guess last year I spoke at the convention during a panel. And they must have liked it. And they said, I want him to speak next year. Thomas said, if he can make it over a year sober, then I'll let him speak. So I kind of worked up to that privilege, and it's an honor and it's a privilege. I'm grateful and thankful to be here and share my story with you guys. Definitely without the fellowship, the grace of God, I wouldn't be here today. I'm an 80s baby. I'm going to start from the beginning because with your guys' permission, I like to be transparent with you. I like to think we are a fellowship that does appreciate substance and character with the story. So just to give you a glimpse into my life and my experience, about 33 years old, I was born in 81 right here in Milwaukee. Grew up with my mother. My father had abandoned me, went to Mexico. My mother had, she was kind of absentee, and she had a lot of health problems, and she was always taking medications. I remember always pills, buckets of pills. It was just devastating to watch, you know, her demise and deteriorate over the years, and it was painful. But also, she had a very poor choice of men, you know, and they would brutalize her. And I mean, I remember seeing her pummeled relentlessly. And so when I grew up with anger. And the only way that I knew to get rid of it was through violence, you know, and I would act out in rage, you know. And it took me, years, and I still deal with it. I mean, I had to go through counseling. I really had to search myself to find out who I am. But it wasn't until I got sober until that process was able to begin. So when I was around 10 years old is when I first experimented with alcohol and marijuana. You know, I hung out with an older crowd. My friends and big brothers taught me that this was the thing to do, you know. And I remember just wobbling home. I was just exhausted and inebriated. I never felt nothing like it, and I just kind of stumbled up the stairs, and my aunt pushed me, and I remember trying to get in a bathtub and run cold water on myself to try to bring myself to, but it didn't work. And I woke up the next morning in my bedroom, and I was naked, and I was wondering what had happened, and I was scared, you know, like, what happened? It was probably my first blackout. And so I stayed away from alcohol for a while, and I used to smoke a lot of weed, joints and stuff, and I thought it was fun. You know, I would get the munchies and laugh hysterically. You know, that was just a part of the thing. And that continued for a while, and the community that I grew up in was just infested with drugs in the early 90s, like 90, 91. It was just, rampant, you know, prostitution, gang violence, territory violence over the drugs, and I easily got involved in the mix, you know. And so here I was, like 10 years old, and I had learned to earn money, you know. I don't know, I grew up poor. I remember when I didn't have shoes, so I'm an enthusiastic person. I was like, okay, I'm gonna get right into this because I'm going to make some quick money, and I'm going to do what I'm going to do to get by because my mother couldn't provide it. I didn't have my needs met at home, so I was starving for love and affection, and those things, those needs weren't met. So they had to be fulfilled. Those voids have to be fulfilled and replaced with something, and so I just delved into that criminal lifestyle, and I went all in with it, and I got consumed with it, and it was addicting, you know, because the money and everything that came with it, the money, the fast lifestyle, the women, you know, I was a chauvinist and a misogynist, you know, and I didn't consider myself the gentleman that I am today. I had to earn that though, and I really had to go through the fire to appreciate that, you know. I had in essence become the same people that I hate that had victimized my mother. And that took a lot of self-reflection, you know. It took a lot of pain, a lot of cleansing to get through that. But I really had to hit rock bottom before I got there. And so throughout that time, you know, this lifestyle can become like a whirlwind. You just get swept into it. I mean, the minutes, days, hours, weeks, years all of a sudden evolve. Before you know it, you blew 10 years of your life and it's down the tubes for what? You know, crack rock. Anyway, that was my poison. So I was about 16 or 17 when I started smoking Primos. You know, I got to imagine that I probably was viewed as a target, you know, because the drug network system had become quite lucrative for me, and I was successful at it. And my friends would come to me, and I was basically like the source. And they always encouraged me to try it and stuff. And I always knew it was the cardinal sin, it was taboo. But the addict in me, the thrill junkie, the seeking, you know, it was only a matter of time, you know, because that lifestyle, it was just revolving around me like the galaxy on the axis. And so eventually I got, you know, I stepped out and got caught up into it. You know, I'll never forget the first time I did drugs. I was in the bathroom and I did it and I was like, whoa, I was disgusted by the taste, but I just remembered this relief, this well, you know, you guys all know. That's what I felt. And that was when the sickness really began. I was 16 or 17 years old. I had been exposed to a hardcore illicit street drug, and I was consumed with it. I had it at my disposal. It didn't make a difference. I would take a big bag, and I would go into the bathroom. It wouldn't come out for sometimes days at a time. And my mother, grandma, they were, I can't imagine what they were going through. Eventually, you know, they died on me when I was in prison. But it was probably from sadness because my brothers and I lived this type of lifestyle and they didn't get a chance to see us come back, you know. So I remember it was around 1999 when my son, my first child was born, my son. And by that time I had been using drugs for a year or two, maybe a couple years. And it went from the point of just partying and hustling to the point where I was just enamored with it. I was consumed with it. It was my lifestyle. I would get off of school and take my book bag and go directly to the spot where all the prostitutes, where all the junkies, where all the hustlers, where everybody was. And I was in the mix of it. And because of my outgoing and likable personality, they're like, yeah, that's Tony. They took me under their wing and they showed me the ropes and showed me the streets. And they just wanted my drugs. They just wanted my money, whatever I had to offer to get them through their misery. And I don't hold any resentments toward anybody for that. But that's what it was. And it got to the point where I went from, you know, I have, what do you call it? I fell off, you know. I was using so much of it. Now I'm smoking up everything, doing all the drugs. What they say, the week's supply was gone in the day. You know, for me, it was gone in an hour, and I was right back hustling, being a middleman, the fast talker, whatever I had to do, I was doing it. And that led me to prison. And I was so young, though. I was around 19 or 20, and I was in, like, a juvenile kind of prison, I guess, facility. And there it was all young people, and it was taboo for a young person to use cocaine and crack and all that stuff. So I wasn't opening up about it. I kind of kept it to myself. And so I didn't get the therapy and the recovery that I needed. And I remember there was a guy from Cocaine Anonymous. He was H and I. His name was Tom W. Big, tall guy. Maybe you guys know him. I heard he passed. You know, God rest his soul. But I started going to meetings. And I started experiencing that therapeutic relief, you know, from just venting and sharing with people and stuff. But I wasn't working the program. I didn't know what it was to apply myself wholeheartedly to the program. I just was going to the meetings to talk. And so I thought maybe I had found some recovery there, but I didn't, because I got out of prison in 2004 and then I went right back, you know, and I thought I was clean and I could handle it again, and I got right back in the mix. It wasn't long, maybe 6 months or a year, whatever. I went back to prison, same story, and I learned even more than last time. I mean, I did what I could in there. You know, I educated myself. I read a lot, went to school, got diplomas, did everything I could. But I still got out, and I was just, you know, bigger opportunities in the drug game persisted. And so it was so hard to say no. And I got back into it, you know, again and again. And that led to prison again, you know. Went to jail for delivery of controlled substance, possession. And, you know, spent over 7 years of my life in prison. And then when I came home the last time in 2011, I realized how much of my life I had burnt up without giving my son, you know, a father. And I started seeing it in his life. But when I came home this time, his mother said, come and get him. She had been fed up with him. He is a little too much for her. And so when I took on that responsibility, I was still dealing drugs and had all this stuff going on, but I kept it a secret from him and stuff like that. But he was still absorbing that lifestyle, you know, having things easy and stuff like that. And I thought it was okay because I didn't have to touch the drugs and I wasn't using them. But, you know, every once in a while when I got my hands on the stash, I would take it and stuff and go and use. So I was caught up in that, in this relationship, and my significant other at the time was basically, you know, like deep into cocaine, and that was our lifestyle. And it was hard for me to get out of that because I was financially attached, and I was kind of, you know, it was threatening. It was a bad situation that I had to remove myself from, but I had to retire the game. I literally had to walk away with nothing. And I had, you know, so about 2 years ago, I left with nothing but the clothes on my back and my work truck, my work clothes, and that was it. And I started my life again. But I didn't know recovery. I was still drinking and using, and it was casual. It was social, I thought. I made the classic mistakes like anyone could. I was like, oh, I wasn't aware of how sick I was. You know, I didn't know that the problem was here. And so I remember I went to another relationship right away. I fell madly in love. You know, I had these gorgeous women. And then I was monogamous, and I felt like I was doing things right. And I started working. Things started coming together, but I would still drink and kick it. And then, you know, I would use drugs here and there, like maybe once a year. Then it was, you know, twice a year. You know, we talking about, but you know what a binge is. I mean, I'm going until I can't go no more. I'm already called in, or maybe not called in, no work, no show, whatever. And so they got to be closer and closer. And by I think it was October 2013, I just went all out. I mean, I lost it. I had rekindled my addiction all over again, and I never thought it was going to happen again like that because I had the job, the career I wanted. I mean, I'm a union carpenter. I'm indentured to the state. I'm contracted. I work for a prominent company. I make a competitive wage. You know, I'm a what society would call a productive individual. And none of that was enough to stop me. I couldn't just take a hit and stop and turn around. Hell no. I blew through, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, the car, everything, the girl, everything, blew it all in a matter of like 3 weeks. This is when it hit hard. This is when shit got real, as they say. You know, shit got real. Shit got real for real. I mean, I remember spending my last $1.38 on the tall can of Milwaukee's Best Ice. You know times are hard when you're... I am trying to drink to oblivion. Looking at my... thinking, where is the rent money going to come from? Where is this? Where is that going to come from? How am I going to do it? I didn't know. But, like I said, by the grace of God and the fellowship of CA, you know, remember the last time I used, and it was the end of that 3 week bender. I was determined to go all the way with it or get clean, you know. And I remember I always had prayed like, God, please remove this desire from me. And I just didn't know what I was gonna have to go through to have that desire removed. I mean, I had to go through hell and high water. But you know what Winston Churchill says: when you go through hell, keep on going. And to be nice memories. So I called the dope man up. I said, man, I was gonna sell the TV. And you know, it was the little TV, of course. The son, my son was, he would miss the big screen too much. That would be too obvious. So he said no. Of course, I was pissed or whatever. And I think I managed to get a front or a lookout or whatever it's called. And it was hot. You know, I was smoking dope out of a sock, you know. I remember pushing the pipes before and then cutting my hand on it. And I mean, you know, tiptoeing around the attic. We're talking about insanity here, you know. There is a SWAT team on the ceiling. I know they're coming for me. I know it. There's someone out there. That is the insanity of it. That is how I left off the addiction. I remember I used to get up in the morning. This is in 13 now. I get up like I was going to work. I mean, you know, because my son was getting up for school, I had to play it off. And I was like, don't let the bacon burn. I was walking through the kitchen in my underwear, cooking bacon, going, don't let it burn. You know, and on my intermission, I'd go upstairs to the attic and do hits of crack. And that's how bad it got, you know, until the last, till that $1.38. And when the dope man didn't take the TV, you know, my only alternative was a meeting. So I came to a meeting. It was a Monday night. It was at the VA. As a matter of fact, one of the brothers, Lewis, was there. And that's when I found my beginning here in this fellowship. You know, that's when, you know, I think I had to hit rock bottom, because it wasn't until then that I come to appreciate what I had gone through. I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. When I came to the meeting, it went well, you know, and besides that, I didn't have any alternative. You know, it wasn't no going back to that. Well, I mean, there was, but I just wasn't willing to go that far. You know, I had exhausted myself. So from that day forward, I've been clean and sober one day at a time through the grace of God in this program. And I was serious about this time, not like before, not just going to the meetings. You know, I endeavored myself. I applied myself. It promises itself. We are painstaking. That means this shit going to be rough. It's going to hurt. It's going to be like turmoil all over again. And that's what it was, because I really had to take a look at myself and the sick shit that I put the other people around me through, you know, and take a look and evaluate myself, who I was as an individual, what was I contributing to the community and the people around me. I was destructive. And I was sick. It started to add up, you know, because, you know, I worked the program. I got it right here. I got the paperwork. I did it all. It's all in black and white from steps one. You know, all of it. I wrote it down. I brought this here to remind myself of the time that I invested into it, that this is what brought me through the process of detoxifying and cleansing my spirit. You know, it's a sickness. It's a malady. It talks about in the book. But I was into action, though. I was determined. And if it wasn't for my sponsor, I wouldn't have faith today, because I was like, oh, this program is a bunch of bullshit. I was like, watch me call this guy at 2 in the morning when I was fiending for dope, mad because my girl wouldn't pick up. Watch him not answer. But he answered. And he talked me off the ledge. Who better to help an addict than another addict? They say the therapeutic is without parallel. When you know you kept someone over one more day, that is like, that's what makes it all worthwhile, you know, because you have to be grateful for where you sit today, because you people out there don't make it another day. The last time I spoke, my brother died of an overdose on heroin on November 4th. I was speaking at the Coke Busters meeting on Milwaukee South Side, and I had just left the hospital. The doctor said he might, you know, they had a pulse, they had a heartbeat, and I thought he was going to pull through. When I arrived on the scene, the paramedics were there revitalizing him, doing CPR on him. And I just got down on my knees right there in the middle of the street of 16th and Greenfield and prayed for him. And they said they got signs, you know, they had a heartbeat, they had a pulse. And they took him to the hospital, St. Luke's, went there, followed him there. They said, this is moments before I was scheduled to speak at the meeting. And so I talked to the doctor. I said, how's it looking? He says, we're working on it. We got the pulse. You know, that was all I could do. And the only thing in my head was, you know, I had to come speak, because there was nothing more I could do there. You know, this is my own flesh and blood. And so I applied myself to the program. I adhered to what I had learned to put my sobriety first, because I easily could have run away to deal with the pain. But I knew I had to be there. And so I went running, hauling ass to the meeting. And I spoke, you know, because I just want you guys to know that I feel like, you know, he died on my watch, and I wasn't able to share the message with him. I tried him to come, talk to him about it. He would deny. You know, the day before he died, I saw him, and I asked him, like, are you fucking around with that stuff? Are you doing it? He was like, no. He had just walked from a halfway house, so he had tons of shit going on in his life, but he looked happy, and I know he was sober at the time. He was looking good. His hair was clean. His face and skin looked nice. And he must have got a hold of some stuff that was powerful, you know, and his tolerance was low. It was an accident. He died. And I just, you know, that's when the serenity prayer come into play. You know, that's beyond everything. We got young guests. I'm going to wait till he probably gets acquainted. We got to have respect for the little people. That's right. So that was commitment, my level of commitment to the program. It's a way of life for me, you know, and I even endure hardships because of it. You know, people want more in my time, but I got a schedule. You know, I'm a secretary. You know, I delve myself into service work. I'm a secretary on Monday nights at the Dewey Center. You guys are always welcome there. I'm always giving out hugs and good times there. And my home group, that's when I service. But my service, I mean, where I get service, my home group is Coke Busters. That's where all the magic happened for me. They say don't leave before the miracle, and I mean it. You know, there's a miracle. I remember after about 30 days of sobriety, the secretary there at the time, her name's Melissa, she said, something's different about you. And I was like, I don't know what it is. She said, oh, you're happy. It took someone else to realize that was so foreign and so alien to me. I didn't know what happiness was. I was like, oh, I am happy. Well, damn, thanks for noticing. thanks for making me aware. You know, they say, we're the last to know. And it's true. We're the last to know all this stuff going on. Buildings collapsing, crushing, exploding all around us. And we don't even know it. You know, because the disease of self-centeredness, self-pity, all self-delusion, all that stuff is the blinder, you know. And it was so hard for me to get outside of myself. But I remember when it came time and my sponsor told me, you need to start looking to sponsor someone. I was like, oh no. Oh shit, that's gonna require time. That's gonna require effort. How am I gonna dodge this one? There's no dodging the bullet. That's a part of the program. You can only keep what you have by giving it away. You know, service is the action in this program. And it's my privilege to serve. You know, I know that now. And if it wasn't for sobriety, I mean, I wouldn't have come along. But, you know, I was aggressive with it. I got involved. I mean, I had to go. I remember around that time, you know, because so much lied in the balance of what my decisions were. I went to the mental health complex and I got an assessment. And I got some referrals to get AODA counseling. I went to La Casa and stuff like that. And I had a therapist, a counselor, and a recovery support coordinator. You know, not only that, I got involved with spiritual activities. I'm Christian, I'm religious, and stuff like that. And that's what works for me. But I wouldn't have been able to do it or even care about it if I wasn't sober. And not only that, having a formal counseling and a support, I mean, the support, you know, that is really what empowered me, is you guys having support, you know, because in all the walks of my life now, there's people, every way I turn, there's people, because I apply myself to them. I get them, I lean on them, they lean on me. And without that support, you know, that's why they say it's a we program, not a me program. Okay. That support gets us where we need to be, gets us outside of ourselves. And that's what worked for me. And the formal counseling gave me the opportunity to start looking into my own mind where I was lacking and the deficiencies that were there. I talked to the counselor, you know, because I consider myself a brainiac and an intellectual. And I told her, I said, look, I got this shit going on. What is it? And, you know, our emotional growth and our ability to reason when we're using goes down, you know. And people were like, you act like a big kid. Yeah, I act like a big kid. I'm a kid. I'm still stuck in, you know, party central. That's where I left my maturity. And so I said, well, what can I do to reverse this process? You know, and I had this, she said, when you go past a dope house, you got to keep on going. You got to, you know, that's how I started developing my mind. Started combating the disease, using the tools of recovery they give it to us. Abstinence, meetings, the telephone, the literature. If I wasn't in one, I was in the other. Wholeheartedly, and if it did, it all stemmed from that first phone call, that faith. You know, and today I make those phone calls my priority. Someone called me from I don't care where I'm at, what I'm doing. If I'm busy, give me a second. I will stop, you know, pull over, whatever it is I got to do, because someone's life collides in the balance, you know. It's evident. They say jail's institution of death. How many of us have witnessed some of those things? The step work, it was actually good because I got to learn how a healthy person stays healthy and processes incomprehensible demoralization. That's a big ass word to say. I really fucked up. That next morning after you blew everything, you know, after you did everybody wrong, that's incomprehensible demoralization. Oh. Hey, I'm sorry. Please excuse my profanity. I didn't mean to. He's like, you know what you did, mister. We're square. I won't do it again. And I'm happy to announce that, you know, I have a child on the way, so I have a profound respect. Thank you. She's due in February. You know, I'm also, March, sorry. Yeah, I get caught. And her mother's attitude is up to, I've had it up to here with her. But I'm dealing with it, you know, one day at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time. You know, the last few days I was seething. I mean, I was at work, you know, it requires so much energy to be sick and to be, you know, that just deal with that mental illness. But it just takes, you know, it might take just a kind word to change all that, you know, from someone. You know, the people that I got to know at my home group and bond with, people that watch the growth, and you get to see this person's life change. When you see the pigment of their skin, the texture, and the substance in their voice, you get to see who a person is, and you get to feel their spirit. You're like, man, this works. I wouldn't give that up. You know, I wouldn't go back. I mean, I've been sober like 15 months. And, you know, I'm here to reinforce the program with people that's been here a while because they slip too. But even more importantly is the newcomer. You know, that's what I feel like is the most important thing, because we got to welcome them with open arms and show them love and acceptance. You know, because I remember when I came in the room, I would go in some rooms and people would start leaving. I was so happy when I came to these tables in these rooms that nobody was trying to get out. I was like, I know this is the place for me. They can deal with my shit. I was like, I can work through everything else. I can get there. And, you know, I've been blessed tremendously. Today, I thrive. You know, the promises have materialized and came true. All my prayers were manifested before my very eyes. I consider myself a very wealthy man. I work very hard. I do big things. I had dreams of building a community. You know, and right now, I mean, I'm a carpenter. I'm building America, you know, and I'm very serious about my work. I'm passionate. I'm diligent. But even more importantly, you know, I'm also into evangelism, and that's the part of outreach in my church, but that's my thing. You know, that's another conversation. But this program is part of who I am. It's ingrained in the fabric of me, you know. If it wasn't for this book, I never would have had the chance to find clarity, you know, to be able to see through the fog, to be able to see through all the pain, all the everything. I just, you know, and it's all because of you people, you know, that were relentless and devoted, committed to making me well. And they, Dr. Bob and Bill W., I'm thankful for them because they put it together, and it's right here in the book. You know, I read and got as far as, I just reached, you know, I actually just picked up my first sponsee like a week or two ago. And so I finally reached my 12th step, and it's like, I want to start back over. Because now I'm like, there's things that I can apply this to in my life, and it's almost like refiltering the life. You know, now I don't got the beer goggles on no more. I ain't looking at things through the kaleidoscope crack pipe, you know. I'm looking at things head on, dealing with life on life's terms, and it's all because of this program. With that, I pass.